This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. Welcome to Province Sports Radio. It's Tuesday, July 28th. It means it's a casual Tuesday, shockingly, and I believe at home in his pajamas on the line, Steve Ewan.
I'm definitely casual this morning.
You're always casual.
Thanks for asking.
Let's be honest.
I'm a pretty casual guy.
So we're talking to you from home because you're a very busy man these days.
I have a fair bit going on, yes. But we must do casual Tuesday for our devoted followers,
dedicated
led by, of course, B.B. Lee,
the game changer. Yes, absolutely. There's a lot to talk about, Steve. You want to just open up with the big news of the day?
I had yogurt for breakfast.
Oh, so did I. Granola.
There you go.
And blueberries.
I actually had blueberry yogurt.
Do you think Troy Tulowitzki had blueberry yogurt this morning?
I don't know why.
Well, he had the big trade to the Blue Jays, you know? Big pickup? It's a bad segue.
I'm not a huge fan of that trade. I think if they had gone and gotten Cole Hamels mm-hmm. for the same package, I'd probably feel better about it. But as a guy that would like to see the Blue Jays win, because I know if the Blue Jays do well, that means better things for the Vancouver Canadians, which means better things for my kind of spot in the paper.
Well,
from a completely selfish standpoint.
You know what? I like it. I get it. I'm with you that, yes, they needed to bring in a pitcher, and Cole Hamels is that kind of guy. But in the end, Reyes was a shell of what he once was. He was fun to have around.
He was like Reyes light.
Yeah. And Tulo, if he can stay healthy, which is a good question, given that he is still moving to turf, Tulo could still be the best player in the game.
Yeah, the most valuable guy in the game, considering the he brings you corner offense from a middle spot, right?
It's
it's interesting because I think they're, as we're seeing in Vancouver with kind of the lackluster season they've had so far, or the lackluster record that they've shown so far, they're running out of prospects. That kind of run of prospects that we've seen come through Vancouver isn't quite what it's been. So, I guess that if you're going to take a swing, and with the way the contracts are going with Bautista and Encarnacion, I think they're free agents after next year. I think you got to take a shot, but
Oops, sorry about that. I was trying to bring up the trade, and that was ESPN.com yelling at me. I apologize.
Okay, no problem.
That was dramatic. Well, carry on with your thoughts. Sorry, apologies.
That was exciting.
It was.
So no, I think they need to go get a pitcher. And if you believe what you read on Twitter, they're looking at maybe an Ian Kennedy out of San Diego. And mm-hmm. I think if they're gonna, I'd like to see them kind of maybe go a level up from that. But don't know. They've still got some interesting. They still got a lot of power arms. They still got those young Latin American shortstops. So I think they've still got a couple pieces, but I don't know if I would have made that trade.
I don't know. I go from the standpoint of you got to win now, and you got to go from a position of strength to strength. And if they've got hitting, I mean, the thing I get about they already were hitting. Okay, great. But if you can, if you can get more hitting, it's kind of hard to argue against that, even if you do need more pitching. I guess in the end, you would hope that they're out looking for another pitcher because in the end, I mean, I don't know if Ian Kennedy's the guy. He's been pitching in a great ballpark. He's done well in the past, but moving to a place like Rogers Center, it's a tough place. He's no
Cole Hamels.
Exactly.
He's no lockdown. People are, worried about facing Ian Kennedy.
He's an upgrade on what you have on the back end right now of your rotation, but
yeah, but he's more of the kind of burly kind of, not a, you want somebody that has got kind of no hit stuff. And last time I checked, the last no hitter was kind of Cole Hamels.
Yeah, yeah, it was. I don't know.
I was, and again, I'm biased. I really liked Castro.
He was a fine, exciting, and we got to see him right here, which was
exactly.
I totally understand that.
Right. I mean, they've run through a lot of really good arms here, right? And you know, Syndergaard and Nicolino and guys like that we've seen here, and you kind of thought, oh, geez, they're going to be real kind of stud guys when they get to Toronto, and it just hasn't happened, right? So it's interesting. I get the feeling that this is, like I said, that this is kind of the window's closing. So I get making a monster deal. I just don't know if that was the right monster deal.
Now, the real question is, LaTroy Hawkins the real key to the trade? Because, I'm just so pleased that he's still pitching.
I saw somewhere again on Twitter that his first game, I think he gave up a home run to like Gary Gaetti or somebody.
No, you're reading something I retweeted, which was that in his second start, Greg Gagne hit a home run with Gary Gaetti.
Greg Gagne, that's right.
With Gary Gaetti on base.
Yeah, so that tells you...
it gives you hope, doesn't he, Steve? You're only a couple years older than him.
Exactly. And I'm playing bad slow pitch badly. So it makes you wonder. Gaetti's already retired from managing, I think.
I think that's right.
Let alone playing.
Gary Gaetti, I mean, I just think, so Gary Gaetti was this sort of funny-looking third baseman for some reason. There's something about the way he ran or his knees or something when I was like a kid. When the Twins won the World Series in, 87? Is that right?
Something like that. That's like a poor man's Ronsay.
Well, see, I wouldn't even know that, but this was like the first World Series I really watched and paid attention to. And first of all, I was confused why the third base coach was, first of all, praying, second of all, wearing garbage bags under his uniform. Because that's what his jacket looked like. But also this guy named Gary Gaetti, who, as far as I'm concerned, didn't really look like much of an athlete. What do I know? I was six. But he kind of disappeared. And then to discover that he had this resurgence with the Cardinals in the mid-90s, and yet still looked 1,000 years old. That's what I think of Gary Gaetti. So to think of LaTroy Hawkins actually having played with him and been this sort of young hotshot pitcher for the Twins, I don't know. Anyway, he's been around a long time, and I'm impressed. He's kind of Jesse Orozco for the new age, I guess.
A little bit, but he's actually right-handed. I could see if he was a left-handed guy.
Right, fine.
Left-handed guys tend to last forever.
Yeah.
But
I just assumed he was a lefty because he's still pitching.
Yeah, to be a right-handed guy to keep going. But Gaetti, I'm just looking it up now, is turning 57.
Ooh.
Last game was in 2000 with the Boston Red Sox.
I didn't even know that.
20-year big league career, 360 home runs.
good ball player.
Yeah, I mean, again, I forgot all about his time. He had a 35 home run season in Kansas City. I forgot about 86 with Minnesota, 34 home runs, 108 RBIs. The next year, 31 home runs, 109 RBIs.
In an era when nobody hit home runs.
He was finished 10th in American League MVP voting in 1995. So,
well, there we go.
That was kind of a fun team. If you look at those Minnesota teams with Herbeck and Jack Morris and Kirby Puckett, and there were some fun guys on those teams. Jansky, Hatcher.
Mickey Hatcher.
I know. I'm going crazy.
Are you getting a bit misty eyed?
Yeah, a little bit.
A bit misty-eyed. And I missed the Shane Victorino traded to Angels. That was a nice little depth pickup for them. That was yesterday.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Victorino isn't the guy. Much like Jose Reyes isn't the guy that we kind of remember. Victorino's probably not the same either.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing with him is actually like much more useful, I think, than people have given him credit for over the years. Like people have this. He had a couple seasons where he had some real injury troubles, but the last couple years he's been pretty solid and in the lineup.
He's okay, but he's not.
No, he's
not going to hit the middle of that order.
No. But I mean, if that's a guy you're using off the bench, that's a very good guy to have off the bench because he can still run a bit and he can play the field. And
a depth guy, but I don't think he's challenging Mike Trout for
no.
But
overall, I mean, it's kind of shocking to see how badly things have turned out for the Red Sox this year. I was harassing Cam Tucker a little bit about it.
It's frightening, but I mean, do I like Victor Reno more than Matt Joyce? Probably.
Right.
So he's probably gonna see considerable time there, right? But yeah, I really like C.J. Wilson. I really like Garrett Richards. Houston Street is like a big time closer in my mind. So
Houston Street, the second youngest to get to 300 saves.
The save stat isn't what it was. Where it feels like now, if you're, you come into the game with like a 10-run lead, it's now a save possibility, not like the old days where you had to kind of come in where the game is on the line. So yeah. I'm not as big a save fan as I used to be.
That's all right. You're allowed to change your opinion, Steve.
Okay. It is a casual Tuesday.
It is. All right. I got, what else I got here? You want to do hockey first or you want to talk?
I'll do whatever you want.
Well, this morning, again, the Lions are continuing their assault on the TV blackout rule. Despite the fact they drew only 20,000 fans on Friday night. And they're basically saying it's TV's fault. Thought about this in the year 2015 that we're still talking about whether TV kills audiences or not.
I think it's the Whitecaps' fault. I don't, fault is probably not the right word, but I think they've come in and taken a chunk of the market. I think they've come in and taken a chunk of the market from the Vancouver Giants. I think they've done a great job of selling their product and really getting people excited. And I think the CFL, I think, Major Junior Hockey needs to take a look at what's kind of happening there. I think the Vancouver Canadiens have affected the Lions with, the way they've created their fan experience.
You know, it's something that I mentioned in the morning skate, and I had quite a long thing on it yesterday about looking into why there were so many Blue Jays fans in Toronto, in Seattle this weekend. And yes,
Where can we find the morning skate?
At provincesports.com. I know Johnny Max.
Yesterday to me was one of the better morning skates of late.
Thank you.
No problem.
It's something I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get kind of take something and add actually an actual kind of full on thing to it, and then have the rest as, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to, I got a lot of things that I think about, and I might as well put them to good use. So
you're a thoughtful guy.
Thanks, buddy. No problem. It was something that was clear for those that missed it. Basically, the turnout, especially in the first 2 days of the Blue Jays Mariners series, was a massive representation of Blue Jays support. And a large portion of that fan base were people kind of in my age bracket, which is kind of late 20s, early 30s. People that in the end were kids, young, in between sort of 8 to 12, when the Blue Jays were winning World Series. And it turns out, from a psychological standpoint, there's a whole lot of evidence that shows that that has a huge impact on your long-term sort of fan choice. That if your team won when you were in that kind of range, you're with them for life. And the Blue Jays have done a really good job of kind of reconnecting with that era, as well as finding a connection with people who maybe were on the edge of it, and the result has been they have this huge traveling fan base that comes down from Vancouver. I know there's some of a representation of that comes down from the prairies that go down when they play games in Minnesota. But you read what the guys in Toronto are saying, the writers, the sports writers, and the Toronto Sun, and like they say, Seattle, it is just unbelievable how many people come down. I look at the number of people that were down there, and the age range was there, and I'm pretty sure it's safe to say that that age range is not regularly represented at BC Lions games.
Yeah, no, completely. I don't think, and I mean, just in kind of anecdotal, I don't, people aren't talking about them like they have in past years. Mm-hmm. People aren't as connected with that group. But you know, I mean, if you think about it, you really Angus Reid was out there. You really felt like you saw Angus Reid a lot, and you knew it, and Louis Pasaglia and those guys. And this current generation, you don't. After Lule and Andrew Harris, you have trouble starting name guys. So I don't know what they do. I don't know if it's winning. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the connection is. But there's not that, just my group, my little peer group, aren't talking about lines like they have in the past.
Well, I find it, when you think about who is in the front office and who is visible, all due respect to Jamie, but Jamie's the young guy in that group. Jamie Pipplato is the young guy in that front office. Jamie's did a great job with the Grey Cup last year in terms of trying to build some fan interest, only 2 years after the previous one and in a city that's, as we're currently discussing, has always been, or recently anyway, has been lukewarm towards the CFL. But you got Jenis Skulski, who used to be in charge here. You got David Braley, who's been an owner now almost 20 years, but is not a guy from here, and it is a troubling sign, I think, for them that they're talking about TV blackouts being the problem is a very worrying sign, because it's like, are you guys actually looking at the people in the stands? Because like you said, there's not your peer group, and there's certainly not people my age that are going to very many football games.
I completely agree with it. Wholeheartedly. It's great entertainment, and there's a good CFL game is more fun to me than a good NFL game.
Yeah, no, because it's so wide open, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
No lead is safe in a good CFL game.
No.
On the flip side, a bad CFL game, you see a lot of the punter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. Since we're talking about, and I forgot to mention this last week, I realized, and it's on my notes here. Quick thought on the Rush moving to Saskatoon in La Crosse.
I think it's a shame. I think there was a power struggle in Edmonton, and the Oilers had been interested in the franchise, and Bruce Irvin didn't want to sell, and then they got into kind of a squabble about the arena and things, and I think for this league to have success, I think it needs NHL teams to be part of it. And I don't know if going to Saskatoon makes a lot of sense in terms of the big picture, and I hope it works, and I know Saskatoon's a great WHL city, but this league needs TSN to adopt it. And the best chance is having that tie with hockey and with hockey teams. And we've seen the way they have great success in Colorado. They're having great success in Calgary. They've had success in the past in Buffalo, and those are all strong NHL ties. So I'm not a huge fan. I'm definitely concerned about where this league is going, and I hope they play it smart.
That's pretty honest. It's one of those ones, because I know how passionate you are about lacrosse and how excited you get about this league, and I do find it interesting how it just hasn't quite managed to take off beyond in a couple places for whatever reason. And
Because it's been poorly marketed, and you need to jump on board with one of the bigger fish, and you can't. Lacrosse's image problem isn't that it's a poor image; it's that it has no image, and I think it needs to get TSN needs to adopt it. TSN needs to do for lacrosse what it's done for the CFL. And TSN, with all due respect to the CFL, TSN has had a huge role in making Friday Night Football a trademark,
mm-hmm.
right? A brand. And if you could get TSN to do something similar with lacrosse, I think the league's got a chance.
Yeah, I guess the thing I did find interesting. I don't know if you saw it. I think it was last week in the Morning Skate. I had a little video about the early days of the International Lacrosse League, the beginning of box lacrosse, which I learned all about. And it was just kind of interesting to see that, you know, this was an idea that, you know, 80 years ago, this was kind of a summer league for a few NHLers and a bunch of guys that had been lacrosse stars. And I guess the thing that I was looking at there was thinking about, well, they clearly were trying for some star appeal, and I basically died because it was in the Depression. But to me, that is that the other issue that the NLL has struggled with, that they haven't really found themselves some kind of marketable star? I mean, we talked all last winter about Johnny Paulus and his potential for this local market. Is because to me, that's how you draw people in. You say, hey, that guy, and that's what attracts people, and that's what gets people excited. To go back to the Blue Jays, which we started off with, one of the other things that they've really been aggressive in is really pushing their players to be engaging, for instance, on social media. That, you know, that if you tweet at Jose Bautista, there's a very good chance he will reply to you, and that connects people. And I just don't ever have a sense that the NLL has been doing that with their players.
Oh no, and I think lacrosse is so kind of it's spread in some areas where you've got the NLL, you've got the pro field league, and you've got the summer leagues, and I think people have trouble distinguishing and making connections and figuring out who's who. Lacrosse needs one sugar daddy to come in and take over the whole thing and really create a connection between all those different leagues, so that it doesn't really spread out the fan base. And it's an amazing game at its top level, and it's great entertainment. And I go back to the 2009 Man Cup between the New Smyrna Sand Bellies and Brampton Excelsiors, which is the summer club national championship. And it was a 7-game series. Brampton's 4 wins were all in overtime. It was as good a theater as I've ever seen. And you know, they really haven't been able to build off that. So I would love to see it happen, because the guys involved are amazing. But much like rugby, you know, it kind of needs a push.
Both are going to be interesting to watch. I mean, we'll see what happens with lacrosse. And, you know, of course, we'll come back to that. My last topic for you before we go to our Sunday barbecue is, are you surprised that neither Cody Franson nor Christian Ehrhoff has a team right now, that they're still free agents?
Yeah, surprise. I think it. I don't know if they both misread the market, or they're not. They're among the best 3 or 4 defensemen in this free agent class. But I don't know if they're legitimate top 4 guys on good teams. So I don't know if they've priced themselves out, or they were shooting for certain things and just hasn't happened. I think Cody, I mean, I know Cody pretty well from his time with the Giants, and I think he could be a hugely valuable guy on a very good team, slotted in the right kind of role as a 4-5-6 guy who kind of quarterbacks your second unit power play. And I don't know if they were asking for more than that, or asking for the equivalent of more money than that, or I'm not sure what it is. But it may be in a situation where he has to take a 1-year deal with hopes of spinning it into something else. Ehrhoff's a little older guy, similar in that he's a kind of a puck moving offensive guy first. So I'm not sure what the plan is.
It's I find Ehrhoff's kind of situation a little bit interesting. Here's a guy who, you know, clearly has some puck skills, can skate still, and is a good player. Maybe, you know, whether he is as one dimensional as we think he is or not, I'm not really sure. But certainly, I think we have a perception of him as being kind of an offense first kind of guy. But doesn't hurt you in your own end. But yet, as you said, 33, and if you're a team looking to fill, you know, the 5-6 spot on your roster, and you've got real cup pretensions, I don't think it's a terrible guy to have, especially if, you know, you want to say, hey, listen, you can run the power play and then play, you know, 10 minutes a night at even strength, and that'll be that. But I'm not sure there's a team out there that's really like that. I mean, I you know, there are
depends on what the ask. But I mean, it all depends on what the ask is, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, I look at, you know, I look at, this is a guy that's played for a few teams now. It has, you know, I don't think we've ever heard anything bad about him in terms of being a good, you know, teammate or anything like that. That this is a guy that would fit pretty seamlessly into your room. I just find it surprising that, you know, he hasn't landed somewhere like, I don't know, New York, where, you know, AV knows him well, or you know,
yeah,
somewhere
else. Yeah, like I think the whole free agent class wasn't particularly deep, so yeah. I think, yeah, I don't know if the aspirations of those guys were bigger than the expectations of the team, right? I think, you know, if you're the second or third or fourth best guy in a free agent class, you're expecting, you know, a defenseman, you're expecting $4, 5, 6 million. And I'm fair to assume that teams weren't looking at those guys at that kind of price, at, you know, that price point. I mean, Cody Franson might be the ideal guy in Vancouver to be your 5-6 guy. But they don't, you know, is he willing to come here for, you know, 1-5 or something? Wait, I don't have numbers in front of me, so I don't know what they've.
Just,
what their cap is. Right?
Since I mentioned New York, I went and looked them up, and I just realized they already have 8 defensemen under contract, and the top 6 are all going to play. That's for sure. I think picking up Dan Boyle was maybe a bit of a more than
Dan Boyle is Christian Ehrhoff.
Yeah, but 6 years older, and he's making $4.5 million. So there you go.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but he's that. Yeah, he's your puck moving.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, play yeah, quarterback. Yeah, absolutely.
Guy, right? I mean. You know, a team like Chicago would be the type of team that's let's say one guy away from making a run, but they're kind of cash strapped, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the Kings have made their moves, right? They've got their guys, so I don't know who else would kind of be in the hunt.
You know, maybe he's the kind of guy that ends up having to, you know, he'll get a training camp invite and he'll get in shape and somebody will come November and they'll have a long-term injury and he'll be like, boom, he'll come. Maybe it'll be something weird like that. I mean, I think we're definitely moving into a different cap era, that's for sure, especially with the fact that the cap barely went up this year and so there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, actual ability to add players over the summer.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens.
No, I'm still interested to see what the Canuck lineup looks like,
mm-hmm.
and kind of where they, you know, who wins those last spots and where does Vertanen fit, and, you know, does he fit, and, you know, kind of what their kind of idea is, and so I, you know, do they have another ad in them? I don't think it'll be a guy of huge substance if they do.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the Canucks, and they, you know, they have 7 defensemen under contract right now, and or sorry, I guess 8 if we include Clendenning, which is a fair thing to assume. And they've still got to figure out what they're going to do with Sven Berchi, who they claim will be in the lineup, but they actually have to sign him to a contract. And
well, that's the one that makes me wonder if they're not trying to do something, right? Because I mean, he's going to sign here. It's not not going to be something. He doesn't have a lot of leverage.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest, right? So he's gonna sign for something. Are they playing with that number to try and get somebody else in? Right? I don't know. I think it's an interesting question.
It's I don't think it's anyone's. Oh my God! Canucks have just made a trade.
Oh,
I'm not making this up. The Canucks have added Brandon Sutter. They traded Nick Bonino and Adam Clendenning and a second-round pick last year for next year. Well, that's something else. Holy smokes.
Go ahead.
Wow.
Go ahead. Well, don't wow me. Tell me what's going on.
Well, that's what I'm just saying. Brandon Sutter for Nick Bonino. That's
You know what? I don't mind that at all.
Yeah. That's different because, I mean, Sutter is a $3.3 million cap hit. He's a UFA. Oh, here, you know, that's what it is. He's a UFA next summer. This goes back to this plan that was seemed pretty obvious to everybody that they're trying to make some big move next summer. That's amazing.
Yes and no. I think they're also trying to become a tougher team to play. Right? I mean,
I mean, Bonino was whatever. You know, that was, yeah, I don't know.
He was he's a third line center dressed up as a second line center.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, Clendenning wasn't going to beat out Corrado.
No.
I mean, you want to start kind of playing around here. Clendenning for Forsling is looking like less and less of a decent move now.
Well, yeah, that one's still, I mean, I got it at the time, but if you're not going to keep the guy and you're doing it to get Brandon Sutter, that one does surprise me.
I don't think that's what they were doing. I think they thought Clendenning was more than he was.
Mm. And I guess they had to find out.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's going to be, if Forsling kind of parlays that World Junior success into something, you know, people are going to start wondering about that trade even more. But from a guy that watched a lot of Vancouver Giants gritty kind of physical hockey, I like the Prust move. I like the Sutter move. I don't know a lot about Brandon Sutter as a guy, but I assume he's a Sutter. I don't assume he's Sutter. He is a Sutter, so I assume he's a good guy, like a good dressing room guy. I think they're looking for guys to mentor Horvat and Vertanen and Corrado and kind of that young group. And they're looking for a bridge leadership group after the Twins.
It's if I'm the Twins, I wonder what they're thinking, because in the end, I look at this team and I go, the lineup they're building isn't all that great. They're clearly running for a free agent next summer, but
I don't know if I buy that as much as I think they're trying to kind of rebuild on the fly, and I think they're trying to become more of a playoff type team. And you look at they're trying to become a team. They got Calgary is more physical, Anaheim is more physical. There's the West is a more physical side of the equation, and I think trying to guess whether there's going to be a good UFA next year, I think, is a pretty
well. That's it, and that's
endeavor.
That's what I mean. I'm just kind of like, it's an approach, that's for sure, but it's
are we talking about Milan? Like, is that the name you're kind of playing with?
Well, I mean, he's a possibility. I don't think he's the guy that you want to bring in, because I don't think he's got the skill set you need. But he certainly is. There's no denying he's a great player, and he's got a very particular set of skills.
But I mean, the problem with setting all this up, and the reason I don't think they're doing it is that Milan could he could easily fall in love with LA, and right. His wife and his family could easily fall in love with LA, and he could easily want to stay there.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, I haven't looked at the pending UFA crop that much, but
Steve Stamkos
could be making. I mean, we could be in a situation where it is like it's been this year, where like Mike Green was like one of the big guys.
Yeah.
Right. I mean. Milan could easily sign in LA before the season starts. So I think they're trying to build a kind of a more rugged, hard to play team. If you go back to Willie's history, Willie's had some kind of real. He's had some skating skill teams in Medicine Hat, but he's also had some real physical playoff type grinding teams as well. So I mean, you had a Sutter, a Prost, I mean, you're suddenly a team that is going to have defensemen, kind of with their heads on a swivel.
By the way, I saw a Prust jersey hanging in a window recently. Yesterday, in fact. So there you go.
I know Brendan Gallagher pretty well from his time with the Giants. He raves about Prust as a human being. So, I don't know. It's a team that's been kind of hamstrung by kind of cap issues, hamstrung by no trade contracts. A team that should have made some moves after 2011 to kind of get younger. their core group was all kind of the same age, and that just doesn't work. So we'll see. I know that from everything I read on Twitter, the fan base is pretty irritated with the way things have gone. I don't know if it's time to get frustrated yet, but it's going to be interesting. It's going to be real. It's going to be interesting to see how good Ryan Miller is. It's going to, you know, Horvat. I don't know if he can take a step forward. That's going to be a real key to see how much better he can be. I mean, he played out of his head last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Twins aren't getting younger. They are. It's a kind of intriguing time to be a Canuck fan, I think.
Intriguing is a word. There's still lots to talk about.
Do I understand why people are questioning? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I completely understand why they're questioning. But I've just from that run with the Giants, where they were a big, physical, hard to play team, a team that could go on the road and win games on the road with you know, kind of the forecheck and grit. I don't mind that at all.
Steve, we've run very long, but you know that's all because of the Canucks. But quickly, who are you inviting to your Sunday barbecue?
The Bollywood Boys.
Nice. Didn't you invite them last week?
Did I invite them last week?
I think you invited them 2 weeks ago. I don't remember.
Okay. Well, instead of the Bollywood Boys, I'm inviting Miguel Castro.
Okay, there you go. I like it.
The 100 mile an hour fastball can come to my party, and we can watch him try and renovate my garage.
And that thin air in Denver as well. Is that why? Is that kind of the idea?
I liked him as a guy. He didn't, you know, when he was here, he was still kind of learning English, but yeah. He was a lot of fun. Looks like Kevin Durant.
Yes, this is true.
So I hopefully have him a little send off, tell him that Canada still is very fond of him, and hope that he becomes the best pitcher Colorado's had since Jeff Francis.
There you go, nice one. I have one here. It's a bit of a 2-for-1 deal. And you'll understand why in a second. I'm going to invite Vladimir Putin because today, Tuesday, July 28th, Vladimir Putin announced that he believed that Sepp Blatter should be receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. So I figure that if I invite Vlad, he will not only bring along with him a nice little statuette, or do you get a medal? I think you get a medal if you win the Nobel Peace Prize, so a medal.
It's been a while since I've won the Nobel Peace Prize.
And you may get not only an award ceremony, but also Sepp Blatter at your Sunday barbecue. So there you go. You know, it could be, and some tough-looking guy.
What would you serve for Putin and Blatter?
Well, obviously you would serve borscht, wouldn't you? Isn't that
borscht, yes.
Yeah, and... you know, since Vlad is such a fan of the Ukraine, we'd have a lot of pierogies.
That sounds like a party.
All right.
Can you barbecue borscht?
I'm sure you can do it on your side burner.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. And then you barbecue the sausage as well. So there we go. Everyone's happy.
Sounds like a party. Can you count me in?
All right, buddy. Now, speaking of parties, next Tuesday, big day.
Next Wednesday.
Wednesday. I thought it was Wednesday the 5th. I guess it is the 5th, isn't it? Yeah, big day. Big day for you.
Yeah, thanks for the plug. We're doing a Ride to Conquer Cancer fundraiser at the Earls on First Street. We've got Michael Bublé swag. We've got Biff Naked Paintings. We've got...
Brendan Gallagher swag.
We've got assorted hockey, baseball, football, soccer stuff. We've got... the Vancouver Whitecaps have donated a suite to their Montreal game for 16 people, and all those things are up for auction. I am that's part of my role today is running around, you know, and picking up some stuff. So I'm hoping to add some stuff. We're on Facebook at Crush the Tumor fundraiser. All for the Ride to Conquer Cancer. I think it's 29th, 30th. Where a bunch of us are going to ride our bikes to Seattle, to the Seattle area.
Yeah. And, of course, you can find all that from Steve's Twitter page, at Steve Ewan. It's all there.
Yes.
And
there's also links from your Twitter page,
at Rising Action. Now, thankfully, Steve has not posted any photos of him wearing bike shorts, although he does claim it makes him look better, and I will just...
I feel very, very pretty in bike shorts.
Well, you know what? It's how you feel that's most important.
Exactly.
All right, buddy. Have a great week, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.